Hashtag Am Writing listeners. This is KJ, and this episode of Hashtag Am Writing is, as always, supported by our friends at Author Accelerator. We love Author Accelerator. They are on a mission to help writers write books worth reading. They do that by training book coaches to support writers through the entire creative process, and by matching writers of fiction, nonfiction, and memoir with the right coach to help them reach their goals. You can find out more at authoraccelerator.com.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone. Try to remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause.
I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now 1, 2. Okay.
Hey, I'm KJ Delantonia, and this is Hashtag Am Writing, the podcast about writing all the things at all the impossible times. On this podcast, we talk about writing fiction, nonfiction, essays, pitches, book proposals, other proposals, and in general, what we talk about is the struggle to sit down and get your work done.
I'm Jess Leahy. I'm the author of The Gift of Failure and the forthcoming book, The Addiction Inoculation, coming out in April 2021. And you can find my writing at The New York Times, The Atlantic, Washington Post, and various other places.
I'm Serena Bowen. I'm the author of 35 romance novels. And my latest one is called Sure Shot, wherever ebooks are sold.
And I am KJ Delantonia, author of the novel The Chicken Sisters, which is coming out on July 1st of this year, which is 2020, as well as the book How to Be a Happier Parent, which is coming out in hardback on June 1st. So it's, you know, a month of, or a year of, good Lord, is it a year of firsts for me? Let's just let that one go. You can sometimes find me contributing at the New York Times, where I am the former editor of the Motherlode blog.
And
that is who we are.
I am gonna correct you, because your book is coming out in paperback, not hardback. And the only reason that I correct you on that is that would be really impressive as if you had two new release books coming out, like, you know, pretty much at the same time.
Oh, that my
would be
goodness.
Very impressive.
That would be insane. Yeah, no, it came out in paperback a while ago, and it is coming out. No, it came out in hardback a while ago. Yeah, this is going to be
awesome. But you have something
this is
great.
Why you should listen to us. It's one of those days.
You have something fantastic to talk about today that I am so excited to hear about, because it's like when I get to listen to the gurus on this stuff talk, it makes me really happy. So I get to sit back today and just learn, which is always fun for me.
I know. Well, Serena, this is episode, I think, number 3 in our series, How to Launch a Book, from Serena to KJ. And Serena's going to school me in the art of setting up and maintaining and using your Amazon, Goodreads, and BookBub pages.
That's right. And the theory here, I mean, we could talk all day about different ways you could put your face on the internet, right? But the theory here is that we're trying to meet our readers where our readers are already shopping for books. And that's powerful because, I mean, we could go on a non-COVID-19 day into the middle of Times Square and it would be packed full of people, right? And that would seem like a great target audience for selling anything, except it's really not, unless you're selling discount tickets to Hamilton. So it's so tempting as an author to look at the whole world and say, I'm going to find my readers everywhere. I'm going to get a profile in the newspaper, you know, all these big ideas. And they're all good if you enjoy those things. But the thing about the three sites we're talking about today is that our readers are already there and they're already thinking about books. And that's why it's so important. It's like the easy path to putting our best selves in front of people who like to buy books. So yay for taking the easy route once in a while, right?
Oh, Lord, yes.
Yeah. So we'll start with the world's biggest bookseller, Amazon.com, the beast, or as I call it at home, my overlord. Amazon will sell your book even if you never fix up your Amazon author page. So that's nice and all, but I'm going to tell you why it's so important that you do anyway. So any author, no matter how your book is published, it doesn't matter if you're Penguin Random House or Joe Bob's Little Press or self-published, every author is welcome to make a profile at a website that is reached by the following means: authorcentral.amazon.com. And as we record this today, you could actually do this at authorcentral.amazon.de and authorcentral.amazon.co.uk. You see where I'm going with this, right? Like, you can make a fresh profile in every country, which...
So, yeah. If you make a profile in the U.S., it doesn't pop up on those pages?
Well, I think it would...
I mean, I can see why you might want it to be different. I'm just wondering if it pops up.
To be honest, I can't remember because I have them done in every language now. But I also believe that Amazon is about to centralize this. I think I heard that there was a beta for bringing all this together in one dashboard, which does make a lot of sense. So, you know, we should maybe not nail down the guidance here because it may be changing. So when you log into this, you'll see that a couple of options are open to you. And I see that KJ has already done this. I'm looking at your...
I have, but I don't... I remember if I've updated it. I hope I
Well, have. Your bio isn't updated, but when I'm looking at your author page on Amazon is where I see the work you did at Author Central. And every author has a page that has a permanent link. So I, you know, have copied my permanent link, but yours is amazon.com/KJ-Delantonia/E/, and then a code that is basically your identity to Amazon as an author. And when I go to this page, I see the picture that you put in for your bio. They've recently changed those to be a circle, so you might need to zoom in on yours to make that look as good as it can look. And then there's a big yellow follow button, and I'll talk about what that thing is for in a second. And then there's a pretty ribbon with your various titles in it. And then on yours, I see author updates, and they're blog posts. And that means you've attached the RSS feed from your website to your Author Central account, which is great. And then there's a little bit of other information, like who your also bots are. Like, if people bought your book, they also bought these other people. And look, Jess is one of your also bots. That's so cool.
Woohoo!
That is very cool.
Well, I'm taking notes, and I realized, oh wait, I don't think I attached the RSS feed for my blog, so that's now on my list of things to do. But happy to be in your also reads. Yay!
Yay! So there's something that's going on here that we can't see with the naked eye, and that is that the Amazon algorithm is centralized around Author Central. So when you publish two books on Amazon, unless you link them here on this page, Amazon doesn't treat those as written by the same author. And the reason for that is pretty simple. There are lots of people named Karen Smith publishing books, probably, right? And Amazon can't assume on the face of it that one book by Karen Smith is also by the same as this other one by Karen Smith. So they require us to consolidate our author presence on this page. And that's when all the magic starts to happen. So if you have multiple books, but you've never set up an Amazon Author Central account, then when you publish your next book, Amazon doesn't know to go show it to your readers. And that's a problem, because that's a very powerful thing to have Amazon showing off your latest stuff. And indeed, this yellow follow button is one way that Amazon has a clue of who to show it to. And of course, they also make their own decisions just based on what the book is. So it's both of those things. And if you have enough of the followers with this yellow button, Amazon will sometimes send out a special email that says, "New from Serena Bowen," just to the people who hit that button. And that's quite powerful. So I actually, at various points, have asked followers to hit that yellow button.
I hit the yellow button. I hit the yellow button.
Yay.
I am sure that I, too, have hit the yellow button.
Well, my theory is that the more yellow button hitters we have, the more likely that Amazon is to use this information. But one thing about Amazon is that they won't actually tell you for certain that that email will go out, and they will not promise it. So, for example, in March, when they had to stop shipping anything that wasn't an essential product, however that was defined, they stopped sending out those author emails entirely because they didn't want to prompt people to buy a thing that they were going to have trouble fulfilling. So it's not a promise, but it is a likely thing. Like, it's probable that that yellow button will help you as an author, but it's certain that linking your books together on an Author Central page is a fabulous idea, and everybody should do it. I see big authors, or at least experienced ones, all the time who haven't done this, and I'm always like, why? So I definitely link everything up. Now, if your publisher spells your name differently on from one book to the next, you're going to have a problem. And I actually ran into this with my French publisher. One of them they put Bowen Serena on a couple of books, and I wasn't able to link those books up, and I had to basically fight them on it. Like, you guys, you know, this is a terrible idea. It's not an ego thing that demands that you fix this. It's that people will not be shown this book unless you make it look like my other author name so I can sync it all up together. Like, the algorithm isn't smart enough.
Well, here's a question for KJ. Since I am not looking at her page right now, does she have On Being 40-ish linked to her? Because that is one she could link.
Could I?
Yeah, I have it. I did it. I did it on Author Central. Because you're one of the named authors in that book, even though it's an anthology, that is one of your books. Yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah. Here, I can add it now.
Go do that right now.
Yeah.
I was going to change things right now, but I realized it was too complicated.
So the other thing that you can do with Author Central is you can add things to the editorial reviews. So if your publisher hasn't already grabbed that spot where they put in the little, you know, loved it, Kirkus or whatever, you can do that yourself. I do it for my own books for sure. But you want to be careful that you realize that that special place on Amazon book description pages where all those blurbs show up below the description does not work in every country. So I have begun sneaking a blurb quote into every book's description in the main body. Yeah, because I went, like, for example, it doesn't show up in Germany, so I took the trouble to put all these quotes from people in German on my German book editorial page, and guess what? Like, you can't see them in Germany. So every country store does not work exactly the same way. But at least in the American store, that I found that space to be helpful. Another thing I think about is the bio is kind of precious territory. And I think bios should be brutally short. I read so many author bios that they all start to sound a lot alike. Like, for example, in fiction, everybody seems to love this bio that's like, Karen Smith has loved stories since she wrote one about a bunny in the third grade. Like, they all start that way. And I just think that's a little bit of a waste of space. Like, you could use the beginning of your bio that for something that is directly impactful, especially for nonfiction authors, with your topic. Here's why I'm the expert on this, although put more gently than that so it doesn't sound terrible. There's another from the author place in Author Central. If you go into Author Central, you can see all these spots where they'll let you put things. From the author can be literally anything. And what I like to use that space for is to tell people about the other books in the series or to tell people about related work. And these aren't the bio, so they show up just on book pages. And you can put dead links in there. And by dead links, I mean, if you put a link to your newsletter sign up, it won't be clickable, but you could still put, like, KJ has that cool followkj.com
right
that she owns. So she could just put the follow KJ thing in from the author, and you might get some traffic from there.
Yeah, I mean, the whole point of that is that it's easy to remember.
Mm-hmm. Right. So lastly, about Amazon, I would just remind everybody to look closely at those also bought author names that are there. Because later, if you're trying to figure out who you should do a promotion with, or if somebody says your book is for fans of what, you know, then that's just a clue to who your cohort is. And sometimes we just need that little push, but Amazon knows.
Right. You could use that for your Facebook ads if you were running a Facebook ad campaign, or like you said, just to put it in, you know, if you like this, you'll probably like this because look, Amazon said so.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Who else would we believe?
Right. They know everything and they're pretty stingy with telling us. So why not use the clues where we can find them?
Yes. I'll tell you something that I could do that would make my life easier and would make doing all this stuff easier and that I just need to do is to take all of the various images and... Oh, so we remember on the last episode we created the Marketing Mojo page? Mm-hmm. So I've got the bio and the expect this and all kinds of other things that I can just... What I don't have in an easily accessible file for whatever reason, I just haven't done it, are my images. I really need to pop all the images in just a super easy folder. What am I thinking? Why have I not done this? I do not know.
I have, for every book, I have a folder just for the marketing crud, basically. Mm-hmm. So, and then I pin that sucker in my Mac Finder on the left side until after that book is long gone. So I can always grab it because I found that I was digging those out of whatever folder, you know, repeatedly during launch week. And now I just pin it and I can grab it within two clicks no matter what.
Right. That is very smart. I have them in a Google Doc for media, but I just, my folders are a mess. I need to clean digital house.
Right. So then once we set aside our friends at Amazon, we should probably move on to Goodreads, which everybody should know by now is also owned by Amazon. So when I call them my overlords, I'm not really joking. But Goodreads is a site which has, I believe, more than 20 million subscribers. And it's completely dedicated to people and their collections of books. So if you want to go look for readers where they are, Goodreads is arguably even more targeted than Amazon because people are not shopping for underwear and laundry detergent at Goodreads. So they're definitely in the right place if they're to stumble on your book. And now I have to say that authors have a lot of feelings about Goodreads. It's it wasn't built for authors at all. It was really built for readers, which doesn't mean it's not useful for us, but it's just like one has to put on their emotional armor before venturing over to Goodreads. And when I tell authors that they absolutely should be using Goodreads, it's not the same as saying you must read your reviews over there, because you really do not have to. And I definitely do not read my Goodreads reviews. People will say just anything, and I don't, you know, one has to be in the appropriate frame of mind to find that useful. And I'm not always in that frame of mind, but Goodreads.
Yeah, maybe not while you're just setting up your, you know, just getting yourself settled and launching your book. Maybe not then. Maybe not ever, frankly, but certainly not then.
Right. So if you've never touched your book on Goodreads before, you will see that it is not linked to a Goodreads author. So you can hit that little button that says, "Are you the author of this book? Claim it here." And basically Goodreads, after you make this request, Goodreads will change your account from a reader's account to an author's account. And they're mostly similar, except as the author of a book that's on Goodreads, you have some superpowers in terms of editing that book's information. You are not all powerful, however. For some reason, authors are allowed to update the description of a book, the metadata details like the ISBN and the author and the format and the publisher and the publication date and all of these juicy things are things you can change. But you cannot change what series the book is in, or if it's in a series, or if some random librarian decides to put it together in a series with a book that it does not belong with. Like, never mind. That's, you know, you're not allowed to fix that.
Not that that's ever happened to you.
Yeah, not that I'm bitter.
Not that you would know. Yeah. Title of your next book. Title right. of your memoir.
Not that I'm bitter, by Serena Bowen. And the other thing you may not do is delete a cover. So if your book has a cover change and the old one is up there, then you are just out of luck. You will be looking at it forever, unless you can convince a Goodreads librarian to change it for you, or delete it for you, whether. And they're not allowed to delete them.
By the way, KJ, you can also claim on being 40-ish over there, too, on Goodreads.
I actually can't claim it on Amazon. I tried. I'm not listed as an author. I would have to ask to be listed as an author, which I could totally do.
That's weird, because I claimed it as one of my books, and it was fairly easy. I don't know.
It's probably just, you know, there are probably five blanks in which to shove author names, and
that's weird.
Yours was one of the ones they shoved in there. I doubt it's anything.
That's weird.
I'm not taking it personally.
Okay. Oh, well, that's good. We'll go claim it over at Goodreads then.
And I don't know that I need, I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of good. I love that book, but go buy my novel, please. Like, just if you really want to buy a book by me, there are some books by me, so go for it.
All right. Sorry. Get back to business. I'm good. Get back to business. I derailed everybody.
Well, Goodreads accomplishes some of the same things. You claim your books and you can make descriptive changes to them. But one thing that Goodreads does allow are live links. So if you go to the Goodreads profile for Serena Bowen, you can see that there are links in there to signing up for newsletters and such. And my logo is up there. You know, it looks lived in. And the whole idea here is that when you're cruising looking for a restaurant to try, do you go to the one where you can't see anything? Or do you go to the one that looks like a happening joint? And all of these sites, we're trying to make them look cared for and lived in, because that gives buyers confidence to throw down their $11.99 or whatever the price of the book is. They look, you know, fully populated and happening. And that's something you can do with your Goodreads profile. And I will say that editing bells and whistles into your Goodreads profile requires you to use HTML. And a lot of people grumble about this, like, why can't I just click a button for bold text or for a hyperlink? And I'm of two minds. You know, I believe Goodreads is quite clunky, but I actually kind of like it that way because I have the time and attention to listen to podcasts like this that tell me how these things work, and then go figure out how to make an HTML statement that accomplishes something that other people will be too lazy to do. And so part of me hopes that they never make Goodreads, you know, pretty, because I have the wherewithal to make it happen anyway.
And that is, it's really simple. You can, you know, there are a zillion sites where you can just go ask it for, you know, what's the code for bold or what's the code for link? And,
right.
You know, you just pop them in between the little, I mean, I've been doing that for a long time, but it's not hard. It sounds hard, but it's not hard.
Right. So there's a couple of things about Goodreads that are actually more useful for finding readers than Amazon is. So if you have friends or followers on Goodreads, and they're not exactly the same thing, but they're both super useful, and you take any action at Goodreads, like when I added the Chicken Sisters to my personal shelf on Goodreads, like as a thing that I plan to read, that was immediately shown to in my feed at Goodreads. Serena Bowen marked the Chicken Sisters to be read. And anyone who logged into Goodreads that day, who's either a friend of mine or a follower of mine, saw that book cover and that I had decided to read it.
So does this work like Facebook, in which if someone asks you to be your friend and you say no, they become your follower?
I think they become your follower when they ask to be your friend. Because when I see friend requests, like I logged in today to get ready to talk about this, I had 3 friend requests pending, and each one of them said, so-and-so is already following your reviews.
Ah.
But there's no penalty to saying yes, because unlike Facebook, it doesn't mean they're going to see pictures of your children. And also because I don't believe there's a limit on the number of friends one can have at Goodreads. If there is, I haven't hit it yet. So I actually think you should just friend people with abandon. Like if you see people who are reading in your own genre and you're reading in that genre, then why not? You know, it's not as personal as Facebook on a lot of levels. So it's really okay to friend strangers on Goodreads if you have a common interest. And the worst thing that can happen is they just don't accept your friend request. So yes, it's also like Facebook in that there's a feed. When you open up Goodreads as a reader, you see that feed. So if I open it up right now to the homepage, I will see at the top some action that a friend of mine has taken. Like Heather has marked this book to read, or Linda has reviewed this book with 4 stars. And in each case, I will see the book's title and the cover art. And that's powerful too, because it makes for a certain virality that Amazon doesn't have. And that's super useful. And one way to harness that is with a Goodreads giveaway, which is a special thing. If you're an author and you look at your own book's page, it will say, host a giveaway for this book. And the big catch is that not only does it cost money to give actual books away, because books and shipping, but it also costs money to list a giveaway. And I believe the going price is $119. And I actually think it's a useful tool, and I do them all the time, by which I mean one a book. And I always make my giveaway end before the book is published, because I want people to go buy it instead of waiting to see if they've won it on Pub Day. But I will spend that $119 because of this virality. When somebody enters that giveaway, which is easy to do, they just have to click. And at some point, they have to have added their home address, but it stays in there for you. And once they enter that giveaway, 2 things happen. They automatically add the giveaway to their shelf. And then the fact of them adding it to their shelf and the fact of them entering that giveaway goes into their feed. So a stranger who wants to win a free book just showed your cover art to anyone she's friends with.
Which we love.
We do.
And the more people see your cover art, the better. It's just that's the goal, right? See my cover art lots and lots of times so that the next time you're in the bookstore, which, okay, fine, but all right. The next time you're somewhere where you can buy a book and there's cover art, you think, oh, that looks familiar. I've clearly been thinking about that book.
Right.
That's how it works.
Uh-huh. And sometimes, but again, sorry that I don't know the absolute rule on this, sometimes Goodreads will email the people after the book goes live, this book that's on your shelf is available now. And yeah. So that would mean that they would see it a second time just from that one action.
Yeah, that would be really nice. I don't feel like I've ever gotten an email like that, but I don't get emails from Goodreads, so I have probably either opted out or otherwise made that happen. Because I'm an active Goodreader, but I don't get any other emails, so it's probably a selection that I have made somehow.
That is probably true, because I have to say there are 9 zillion emails you could sign up for on Goodreads, and you'd likely shut them all off.
No, thank you.
Yeah, there's so many. Yes. Like if you have those settings differently, you could just be like bombarded. So remember how we were talking about adding your RSS feed to...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can also do that on Goodreads, and it has a similar effect. Where if you then post a new blog post, you don't have to do anything, but all of your followers on Goodreads are going to receive it automatically.
I'm not sure I've done that. I might have. I can't remember.
It's pretty handy. And then depending again on one's email preferences, the posting of a new blog post in some cases will generate an email to that follower.
Nice.
I know, because I get that. When I post a new blog post, I get an email about it from Goodreads.
Right.
So
my blog stats. Yep, my blog is connected. It is. So.
And in many cases, a traditional publisher will pay that $119 for right. a Goodreads giveaway.
Mine did.
Depending on the publisher.
Yeah, mine absolutely did. They were talking about it from day one. We strategized about how many books to give away. The answer to that ended up being 15 because it's the same price, basically. Anything between 10 and 25
a million.
Yeah, or something like that. I don't know. One in a million. Okay, got it. So yeah, we strategized about how many, we strategized about the timing. They promoted the giveaway, I promoted the giveaway, but the amusing thing is that I am the one who packaged up all the books. Thank you, coronavirus. I actually mailed those last week. So if you entered my giveaway and you won a book, it's coming. Slowly, apparently, but coming.
I always do 3 copies. I don't know if that's optimal or not, but I always get a nice response.
Right.
So
we did 15 and had about 1,500-2,000 entries, I think. It seemed good.
Yay. Yeah.
I don't know that the number, I mean, you'd have to do the same thing multiple times, which is impossible to figure out if the number of copies affects. You probably have. Do you think the number of copies affects the number of entries?
I always do 3 and don't have a clue.
Okay. Not something you've beta tested.
Yeah, I do know this, that it's one of those situations where we don't really care if the same 1,500 people always sign up for all the contests.
Right.
Because we're still getting that viral effect of other people seeing it, like dominoes, mm-hmm. when people, you know, register. So, It's nice that way. Like, you know, giveaways are such a struggle in terms of cause and effect. Like, we always want to do an effective giveaway that motivates the right people to do the right things. I mean, I spend a lot of time thinking about this. And for example, if you give away a $100 gift card, you can get a whole lot of email subscribers, but they will be the wrong people, you know?
Right.
But with Goodreads, you're just assured that the people who are looking at them are people who want a paperback book. And that the people that they will inadvertently show it to when they enter are also people who want to read books.
That is definitely the only reason to be on Goodreads. You gotta love that.
The motivations all line up. So there are some other like super advanced little things you can do with Goodreads if you're a devotee. You can, you should be reviewing other people's books because
good author citizenship.
Yeah, because of good citizenship. You do not, however, have to use stars, and I do not. You can write a review without ever touching those stars. I mean, it used to be that I just gave 5 stars to everything, and now I just don't use stars, but it's all fine.
Yeah, I do the same thing, although it's because you told me that I could do it that way, because it's hard. You don't want to... If all your reviews are 5 stars, they're not... People are going to not see them as worth very much, but, you know, as fellow writers, we... know how hard it is to write a book. It's hard not to give stars. And plus, those are often our friends or at least colleagues. And yeah, it's challenging. So it's easier to say something that's reasonably honest than it maybe is to do the star rating.
Yeah. And I just don't see myself as being in the business of judging other authors' books on a 1 to 5 star basis.
No. All my reviews are, here's what I liked about this book. And if I didn't like it, I'm not going to review it. End of story.
Yep. Yeah. So... I think we should probably leave Goodreads there.
Okay. Goodbye, Goodreads. Now, the BookBub. This is one where I put in some time, and then I have definitely faded away from it. I don't know that it's growing in the way that I thought it might. What are you thinking?
Well, it's possible that one needs... that Goodreads is more useful for people with multiple titles.
No, I meant BookBub.
I'm sorry. I did too, but I misspoke instead.
Okay. BookBub is more useful for people with multiple titles. Okay. Carry on.
It's possible. That's a theory that we can explore. But so BookBub, for those who don't know, is at its core a newsletter book sale list. So readers will sign up for BookBub and indicate which categories are the most interesting to them. And then every day, BookBub will send them, usually mid-morning, an email of very special prices. So an ebook that's usually $4.99 to $12.99 will be on sale from $9.99 to $2.99 and maybe even free. And that's pretty powerful for people who like to save money on books and for people who buy a lot of ebooks. Of course, these are ebooks we're talking about.
I have absolutely gotten that email and clicked through and purchased things that I might not otherwise have seen. But those are books that BookReads, or that BookBub is picking and sticking up there. What is it? What good does it do us to have our own presence there?
Well, BookBub is sort of picking them, but of course they're always nominated by the publisher.
Oh yes,
and pay for. So Goodreads has just a lot of data, kind of like Amazon. They know
BookBub,
who
BookBub.
Likes
you keep Goodreadsing BookBub. We're talking about BookBub.
Oh dear. Okay.
It's okay. We are all operating at the set and established and agreed upon 40% that, you know, the universal 40% coronavirus level. So it's totally fine.
Right.
I think we've just, everyone has conceded that.
I really like BookBub.
You like BookBub.
I do.
I know. Yeah.
As a company, they have a lot of smarts. They basically started this thing a few years ago when the major publishers should have begun it. And BookBub understood how powerful that data would be in ebook publishing way before anybody else understood it. And their technology is great. So as a sale site, they were just eating everybody's lunch in terms of everyone else who tried to do this. They did the best job. And then they branched out a little bit to become something of a Goodreads, like a site where people can share what they're reading and thinking about, which means that you can also have, wait for it, an author page on BookBub, which you can populate with your bio, and it can have live links in it, which is handy. And you can review books there, and also people can follow you. And again, the following thing is important because when you release a new book, BookBub basically promises to send your followers an email letting them know.
That is amazing.
Yeah. Amazon won't promise to, but BookBub basically does. And they don't charge you for it. It's free. So that's super, super handy. I definitely rely on it. And then they have a couple of other programs. There are those ads at the bottom of every single BookBub newsletter that goes out that is a paid ad, and you can buy these ads. The market for those ads is a little bit thin. Like, it's hard to get like 50,000 impressions down there in that box, but you know, it's still worth trying at a modest budget anyway. And then finally, they have this other thing called a featured new release, which is something that you would ask your publisher to purchase for you, or you could buy one for yourself.
Right. That's a weird combination of having to apply for it and also purchasing it.
Yeah.
I've talked about it with the publisher, so it's not free, but it's also not guaranteed if they want to do it. So I don't know if my publisher is going to do that one or not. We have talked about it. It's probably something I should be revisiting. I think they did it.
Well, every Tuesday, every publisher has a whole bunch of these things, and I don't know how they figure out who to nominate, and I'm glad it's not me who has to decide. But it can be a powerful way of reaching an audience because it's not dependent on your follower count. Like, that email is going out to the same million people, you know, no matter what.
Nice. Yeah. So do you have an idea of what that costs the publisher?
It's a couple $100s.
Nah. Come on, publisher.
Yeah.
I'm sending an email the minute we stop podcasting to say, hey.
Well, on the BookBub site, you can find the pricing for that, and it varies by genre. So they know the size of their list is different, and they price it differently. Like, I believe that the biggest lists at BookBub are for mystery readers, so to have that slot.
I was going to guess thriller, so I'm in good, I knew what I was talking about.
Yeah. So in a big category, it could be kind of pricey, and in a small category, it could be a steal. And BookBub's so savvy, right, though, that they're pricing it within a nose of what it's worth.
Mm-hmm.
It's still a good idea.
Gotta like that.
Yep.
All right. I have updating to do.
Yeah.
I checked and I had done my I'm very proud of myself because I had actually done my RSS feed at Author Central. It's like a miracle. It's a miracle.
Well, one thing more about BookBub, which is that if you have buddies in your genre and you can get them to recommend your book during your book's release, that is also a handy thing to do, because when an author generates or writes a recommendation of a book on BookBub, it generates an email to that author's followers. So, you know, if Ellen Hildebrand decided to recommend your book on BookBub,
that would be very nice.
Wouldn't it? Well, then, yes. Then every one of her, you know, 10 bazillion followers would get an email about it. And that's also free, so long as you know the right people. You know, it's handy. All right, then. We have covered the big three.
We have.
We've come a long way from, I remember specifically the day Serena first said the word BookBub to me, and I said, what's that? I've never even heard of that. So we've learned some things. Yay, Serena, for teaching
a thing.
Us. Thank you so much
or two
for
things.
Teaching us things.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, there's absolutely. My other guest star. Sorry.
We have run a little long today, but do we want
to
talk about
so
what
good.
We've been reading? I know, it's great stuff, and I've learned a ton, and I have a list of things to do, but do we want to talk about what we've been reading?
Have we been reading?
That would
yeah,
be
sure, we've been reading.
Because I have not been reading.
Okay, well, I've been listening a lot because I've been gardening a lot, and I've been outside now that the weather in Vermont finally decided to stop snowing, which is, I don't know, some kind of miracle.
It's only been a week since the last snowfall here, so yeah, we're with you.
It's crazy. I wanted to read something New England-y. I was reveling in how beautiful the weather was. And so I went John Irving. And so I started looking at what is out there for John Irving. And so I'm like, oh, I don't think I've ever read Hotel New Hampshire. That book is so bonkers. This book is bizarre. I mean, I have to admit, I am finishing it. But oh my gosh, there is so much to love and loathe in this book. I can hardly believe it. And it's just a bananas kind of book. But, I remember vaguely when I was too young to see it, seeing the trailer for the movie. And I'm vaguely aware of like a whole person in a bear suit and Rob Lowe and, you know, some other things. And so I think I'm actually going to have to watch the very bonkers movie too once I'm done with this very bonkers book.
Well, I love that you're not like just piling on the new releases, but although I love me some new releases, and I have been very heavy into new releases and debut authors this year, in part just because I want to, you know, I want to support, I want to buy, all that kind of thing. So I just read, I can tell that my voice got weird. Full disclosure, I fell off my horse last week. I can't sit in my chair, so I'm like laying all over the floor of my office. Sorry, everyone. we are, you know, podcasting glam professional style today. That's what we're doing. Anyway, I just finished Writers and Lovers. Lily King, she was the author of Euphoria, and I liked it. It is definitely literary, and there was a moment when the protagonist frustrated me so much, as literary protagonists often do, that I texted the friend who recommended the book, and I said, I'm done. This person cannot even write she couldn't do something because she didn't know how to write a letter. Like, she didn't know where to put the address. And I was just like, I can't take it. No one knows. I can't do it. I can't stand a protagonist that is that, but you know, it meant something in the context, and this was a protagonist who was learning and growing, and probably if we followed her from her 90s life in this book to today can write a letter. So my friend Wendy, who recommended the book, said, no, stick with it, and I did, and I was glad I did. It's a book about somebody becoming a writer in the 90s, a young woman dealing with male writers of her own age, male writers that are older, and, you know, it's definitely a fun read for anybody in the biz, but not too meta. I think it'd be good for anybody. I liked it. Serena, have you read anything?
I have literally nothing to contribute, except that The Pleasing Hour by Lily King was one of my favorite books for a long time. It's terrific.
Oh, cool.
Okay, well, I have to add her books to my list, clearly, because I've been missing out.
I think it would probably make a pretty good audiobook. It's very voicey.
Hmm. Okay, well, I'm going to have to check out her work because I've heard you talk about that book a couple times now, and they sound it sounds really, really good. All right, are we done for today? I think we should probably be done for today because we've just, it's so, I've learned so much. My brain is full and I have to like go back to my list and look at the stuff I've learned so much. So
my brain is full and my coffee is clearly broken. My brain is full. Yeah, we should wrap it up.
All right. I want to invite everyone who is listening, who is not already a member of the hashtag AmWriting Facebook group to join because there is some really cool stuff going on there now. People are having really cool breakthroughs. People are releasing books, especially right now at a time when it's challenging to release a book. The authors in there have just been really supportive and helpful to each other. And it's I'm so happy and proud to have helped create that community of people and authors to support each other. So if you haven't checked that out, go ahead and join. Yes, KJ?
Yes, I want to add that supporters have heard, have received at some point our top fives about both Goodreads or all three, Goodreads, Amazon, and BookBub. And I have linked those up in the show notes because they were all public. You can get them even if you're not a supporter. I thought the information in them was so good. We just couldn't keep it. We couldn't keep it tight. So they're all public. So if you hit the show notes for this episode, you're going to find a link to the top five things you can do on your BookBub, top five things to do to your Amazon author profile, and the top things, five things to do on Goodreads. And that will, you know, sort of maybe help you get organized and remember what we talked about. And you can find the show notes at amwritingpodcast.com. And you can sign up to get them in your inbox every week. But it's too late to do that for this one. Like, if you signed up now, you wouldn't get them. So just go to the website.
We've been dropping all kinds of fun stuff there, including some mini podcasts, too. We get some cool questions from the hashtag AmWriting Facebook group. And so I've been answering some of those questions in the form of mini podcasts. So you should think about supporting. It's a fun thing to do. But until then, until next week, everyone, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game. Hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perilla. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.